The World Health Organization's chief is optimistic COVID-19 may be defeated this year. And some scientists say the milder Omicron variant could be the beginning of the end of the pandemic. But is such confidence justified? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Darin Abugaida. It's now the third year of the pandemic. COVID-19 has infected nearly 300 million people and killed 5.5 million. Numbers of infections are breaking records almost every day across North America, Europe and Asia. The Omicron variant is behind much of that surge. Scientists in Britain believe a person sick with the strain can infect 3 to 5 others, far more than with the Delta variant. Now, the World Health Organization warns the two variants could combine and cause what it calls a tsunami of infections around the world. Despite this, the Director General believes the pandemic can end this year if countries work together.
But I still remain optimistic that this can be the year we can not only end the acute stage of the pandemic, but we also chart a path to stronger health security. Building on the successes and failures, we must not only share vaccines faster and more equitably with COVAX and AVAT, we must support countries in manufacturing and rolling them out to everyone. And access to new treatments must also follow.
Well, since its discovery in Southern Africa in November, many studies have found the Omicron variant causes milder disease than others. Admissions to hospitals in the U.S., U.K. and Denmark are lower than during previous waves. And South Africa says it may have passed its peak. Some scientists believe Omicron will displace Delta and become endemic like the seasonal flu. But others are more cautious, as Kamal Santamaria explains.
You may have heard Dr. Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, talking about the twin threats of Delta and Omicron. But whether it's a twin threat to you in your particular part of the world, well, that depends. I'm going to show you some maps, first of all, from our world in data. The red map is showing Omicron infections, or at least where Omicron is more prevalent. Pretty easy to see, and no surprise that down in South Africa, that's where we first saw Omicron, also Australia, India and Russia. But I would draw your attention to Europe. Have a look. The UK, yes, we know there is a prevalence of Omicron in the UK, but the rest of Europe is not as badly affected. It is dealing with Delta. Change to the blue map, and actually I'll change back and forth. Have a look at the change across Europe between the Omicron and the Delta maps. You can see there is a lot more Delta to deal with in Europe as there is in South America and parts of Southeast Asia. Now, just to give this a slightly different take, I've chosen 9 different countries here, and we're looking at their share of different infections. The red is Omicron, the blue are Delta infections. So starting at the top, South Africa has got a rate of 96% Omicron. Now, maybe that's a good thing, having more cases of the milder variant. Further down the list, let's look at the United States, for example, here, which has sort of got a 60-40 split between the two. But I think what's interesting, and I'm going to try to draw a box around all of them here, are these European countries. Italy, France and Germany with rates of 80 to 90% of Delta, the more concerning variant, if I can put it that way, of COVID-19. And maybe that's why their restrictions are a little bit tighter in those sorts of countries. The question now is Omicron perhaps the lesser of two evils?
Let's bring in our guest. Joining us from Doha is Hadi Yassin, who's the head of research at Qatar University's Biomedical Research Centre. Over in London is Oksana Pizik, who's the lead at University College London's Global Citizenship Programme on Outbreaks of Infectious Diseases. And joining us from Bengaluru in India, Prasanna Saligram, public health researcher and member of the People's Health Movement. Welcome to the programme. Thank you for speaking to us on Inside Story. Hadi Yassin, you heard the Director General sounding pretty optimistic that the pandemic can end this year if, he's saying, countries work together. We've heard this call for global solidarity before. So is his optimism justified or is it misguided?
No, I assume this is based on scientific facts, based on two main facts, if we can say. Number one, that the vaccine rate is increasing in multiple countries, and we know that the vaccines are effective, especially if the people are taking the third dose. We know that the third dose can provide some kind of protection, if not necessary from the infection, but at least from severe illnesses, even against Omicron variant. And number two, there are more and more reports showing that the Omicron variant, although it's more transmissible, it causes milder disease, especially in the vaccinated individuals. And hoping by the end of 2022, we have like more people immune against the coronavirus.
Okay, Prasanna Seligram, the WHO chief was also warning that narrow nationalism and vaccine hoarding, according to him, by some countries, have undermined equity and created the ideal conditions for this new variant, the Omicron variant, to emerge. Do you agree with that? And how do you think the vaccine hoarding has allowed Omicron to emerge?
Yeah, one major aspect is that less than 10% of Africa is still vaccinated. And it is no accident that the Omicron variant emerged from Africa. So I think, we keep on repeating this statement, no one is safe until everyone is safe. But the global solidarity that is needed is still missing. After 2 years of pandemic, we are not seeing the sort of global cooperation that is needed for wide dispersal of vaccines and administration of vaccines throughout the world.
But can you definitively say,
Prasanna,
just on the point that you were mentioning a moment ago about the Omicron variant emerging from Southern Africa, can you definitively say that the Omicron variant, the strain, is linked to vaccine inequality?
Vaccine inequality is not definitively in public health. Of course, you can't be definitively talking about certain things. But definitely, yes, there is a situation of vaccine inequality wherein, for example, South Africa has not even completed 23% of its population. I mean, it has not vaccinated even 23% of its population. So naturally, it's a prime ground this is South Africa with a better health system. And if you look at other Southern African countries, you have much weaker health systems, and hence we can imagine what could be the situation there. So that's the point that I was trying to make.
Okay, Oksana Przyk, on this point of inequality, public health officials warned at the time of the vaccine rollout, which was, correct me if I'm wrong here, but about a year ago now, they said that equitable vaccines was essential to preventing mutations as well as dangerous variants that would prolong the pandemic. And here we are now. We hear the same calls for vaccine equality and equity. What's gone wrong?
Well, we took an approach which promoted business as usual. So currently we have two companies in the world that can make mRNA vaccines. Those are the Pfizer as well as the Moderna companies. With that, they have some licensing agreements, for example, with the in various countries to mass produce, including in India. But we should be leveraging global vaccine manufacturing power as much as possible, as well as helping countries to establish in the long term their own manufacturing sites where there currently are none. So there are two things here. The World Trade Organization has been negotiating with countries to try and really achieve a mechanism by which these vaccines can be made more rapidly and they can be shared in a way that currently patent laws restrict. That argument, however, has, let's say, lost steam because countries like the UK, Germany, Switzerland all oppose this in order to protect their industries. And if we're looking at the argument around vaccine equity, we know that in largely unvaccinated populations where there is more opportunity for transmission and replication to occur, that we're just increasing the really probability of variants to occur. I think we're now looking at the inevitability that more variants will emerge, but hopefully we will have the tools to suppress the severity. And that is why the WHO is also now negotiating a WHO pandemic treaty, so that in future there is a legally binding instrument that will prevent vaccine hoarding to occur. So it, right from the beginning, countries will be obligated to share doses. However, this is, of course, contingent upon all countries agreeing, and consensus has been something that's been very difficult to arrive at in this pandemic.
Right. And also, Oksana, the WHO chief said that his organization aimed for a global vaccination rate of 70%, and that's by July, to end the pandemic. So looking at the way things have been going up until this point, do you think that target is likely to be met?
I think it's an ambitious target. I think that it will likely take longer than that if the current level of cooperation stays where it is and if we don't see a radical change in mindset. Countries have made donations, but those dollars have not translated into doses or jabs in arms. And while places in the UK are now have their up to 30% of their population boosted, other countries have yet to get up to 10% of their country, even with the first doses. And that includes healthcare workers, where one in four healthcare workers in Africa are currently unvaccinated. And these are the people who are at highest risk. So we really need to start to think about things more creatively than we have been to ensure that we can get a quicker resolution to the end of the pandemic. This does not mean the end of COVID-19. It means the end of the acute phase, and where we can manage it without the same pressure that we're experiencing here with hospitalizations. And in the UK, there are massive workforce shortages as a result of Omicron, with a steep incline of not only cases, but we're starting to see those first signals of a creaking NHS.
Right. Okay. Hadi Yassin, as a virologist, I wonder if you can explain to us, how do inequities actually prolong the pandemic?
So as was mentioned by the other colleagues, so if you have a community that's not immune to the virus will have the opportunity to replicate. And as it replicates and transmits from one person to another, it acquires more and more mutations. And this means we are going to have more and more variants that circulate in the population. There is one note I want to mention in here is that regarding Omicron variant, the number of mutations that the Omicron variant obtained, from my perspective, it seems that it emerged through unusual event. So it's not like mainly through like transmission from one person to another person, because if it is like that way, we could have detected like earlier than that. But for me, like Omicron variant, because of the high number of mutation, it could be one of two reason how it emerged. It's either it is like transmitted to animals and came back to human, or it has been evolving through immunocompromised patients like HIV. So in terms of Omicron variants, I don't think the vaccine shortage in certain regions have led to the emergence of Omicron variants.
So what you're saying is if inequalities in vaccine access continue, then, Hadi, we will continue to see mutant strains of this coronavirus?
Yes, because like if you are immune, even if you are infected with the virus will not replicate for a long period of time. So like it will replicate for a longer period in non-immune people, and that will give it the chance to mutate. And as transmit from one person to another, the mutations will be acquired and become stable in these variants. And if you are immune, then the virus have less chance to replicate for a longer period of time and less chance to mutate. It's still going to mutate, but the mutation rate will be much lower.
Okay, understood. Prasanna, I'm going to ask you to respond to what Hadi said, because I saw you nodding along. And also, I'd like you to tell us, because we hear a great deal about the situation across Europe, and we've spoken about Africa as well, but what is the situation in Bengaluru, where you are, when it comes to the Omicron variant?
Yes. So first, I'll answer the second question.
Sure.
We are going through a phase wherein we are having rapid increase in cases. In the last 4 days, our COVID count has gone up four times. So we were at 5,000 till about 5 days back, and now we are at 27,000 cases. So there is a rapid increase in the number of cases. So that is the ground situation. We have vaccinated almost 90% with one dose, but 60% of eligible population I'm talking about with both the doses. And we have fallen short by about 40% in vaccinating. So whatever I'm talking about in the global scenario, it has also played out in India, in the sense that only two companies and the Indian government did not break the monopolies. So the two companies were allowed to have their monopoly. And as a result of which, initially we had a shortfall, and then they transferred it to the private sector. The private sector could not use the vaccines because it was very costly and people could not access. So the issue of access, equity, production, all of this are coming together, and it is playing out during the time of pandemic. So that is the first response
to what
is happening
in
India.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. The second is responding to Hedi. I think, yeah, the very fact that there is an immunocompromised person who doesn't have the immunity also speaks of the legacy issues of the way access to medicines have been or access to vaccines have been. So if an HIV patient or anybody else who is immunocompromised is having a variant or having the virus within them, then there is always a chance that the virus mutates. And that's also the legacy issue if you look at the inequitable access to medicines to HIV and those sorts of issues. So the inequities are very stark. And the irony is that the countries which are opposing the whole TRIPS waiver and for the release of the patents and all those, they are the ones which are also going through fourth, fifth, sixth waves. The countries of Germany, as the person from UK talked about, UK, they have been opposing this TRIPS waiver put in 15 months back by India and South Africa, and they are suffering also with the most number of cases. So I think Europe and UK are better off in breaking the monopolies rather than holding on to the monopolies if they want to be safe. And another classic case is Israel,
right,
which did not bother to immunize Palestinians. So there was vaccine apartheid. You know, other than vaccine inequities, you had vaccine apartheid also being followed, as a result of which Israel is forced to do fourth booster dose.
Okay, and on that note, Oksana, let me bring you in. Exactly. On that point of boosters, the WHO also, he did criticize some nations for conducting sort of blanket booster programs, as he called them, while other states remain largely unvaccinated. So there is this view by some of the wealthier nations that the booster shot programs will perhaps find their way. It'll help them find their way out of the pandemic. I mean, can they boost their way out of this pandemic? And how likely is it that it actually achieves the opposite effect?
Well, certainly multi-layered levels of protection are going to be the most effective. Relying on the vaccine alone is partially why some countries have a much higher fourth, fifth wave impact on their healthcare system than others. Boosters, however, we need to be talking about them as a and, because at this point with Omicron, unlike other variants, there is a huge amount of breakthrough infections occurring. So two doses, clearly not enough to really prevent the level of impact on hospitalizations. So again, in the UK, it's early days. We're very early in the wave compared to South Africa, where we saw that it's peaked, but there are cautions about comparing the UK too closely because they had a previous built-up immunity from other variants, and they have a younger population. So in that instance, it is necessary in this case for us to ensure that boosters are delivered alongside other doses.
But and here's at this the thing, rate, the UK... Apologies, but the UK, I mean, data out of the UK very recently suggested that protection against Omicron starts to wane after 10 weeks after that booster vaccination. So does this suggest to you then a fourth jab is imminent, Oksana, and perhaps a fifth jab?
Well, what we did see is a drop in antibodies, but there is also studies being done on T-cell and B-cell protection, and that cross-reactivity, which shows that There will still be levels of recognition within the body to help fight off the pathogen. So it's, I would say that although we have some waning, the point now is that it's still quite effective in reducing hospitalizations. And that is really the most important aspect around the vaccination program in the era of Omicron, is to reduce symptom severity. So even if there is a waning effect with antibodies, which we are seeing with boosters, it may not necessarily mean that a fourth dose is needed. Israel is acting on very early data in this instance, and the WHO has recommended on waiting for a stronger evidence base before proceeding with that. But we need to be making sure that while we have a booster program rolling, that this doesn't detract from vaccinating other regions of the world. So it has to be and there are mechanisms for that to happen. It just needs the appropriate cooperation and less politicization around distribution, as well as some really practical on-the-ground things. So we need technology transfer, as well as ensuring that we have a support with supply chains and other practical aspects to ensure that syringes are in appropriate supply, supporting workforce. It can't just be handing over a blueprint. There needs to be a full package or suite of solutions to ensure other countries can get up to speed with it.
Just to pick up on what Oksana was saying, I wonder if you can weigh in on this situation here, because we also know that there have been reports, in fact, that Nigeria, for example, had thrown out 1 million vaccines because they had expired. So are some African countries getting the leftovers, so to speak, and how do you change that?
So this is more into politics. I'm not sure if I can comment too much about it. For me, there is kind of obligations on wealthy nations to support unwealthy nations in terms of vaccines.
Right.
And one thing I can point out is that maybe some of these African countries are getting, let's say, second or third level vaccines rather than the best vaccine, which are like the messenger RNA. But I really cannot comment too much about this subject. It's something between
okay,
nations.
Okay, let's take it to Bengaluru then. Let's take it to Bengaluru. And Prasanna, would you like to weigh in on this?
Yes, we should talk politics. And the whole vaccine inequities are about politics. For example, there was a recent paper which showed that there are about 100 companies around the world, including African countries, where mRNA vaccines could have been manufactured on a ramped up scale. But we are seeing nowhere that it is happening. On top of it, we are fattening the purses of the ones who also, incidentally, Moderna got the money from public exchequer of United States of America to manufacture the mRNA vaccine. And they are the costliest vaccine. So we need to talk politics. We need to talk about global health governance.
Right. And it's not only that, as Oksana was saying, Prasanna, also, it's not just the shortages of the vaccine, but in fact, the logistics. So once the vaccines arrive into countries, there are issues with distribution. There's issues with vaccine hesitancy as well.
When have they arrived? When have they arrived is also the politics. So they might have been arriving very late. Of course, there are health system deficiencies, which we all know in African countries. But beyond that, actually, there are papers which show that, for example, the whole supply of vaccines have been delayed by the global mechanism that was put up, and for which the African countries even received the vaccines late. By which time they were not given prior intimation, they were not given preparatory time, nothing, and the vaccines landed like that. So okay, there are issues, multiple layers of issues. But one of the things that we have to talk about is if there were to be enough supplies, then we would not have had so much of bottlenecks everywhere. So.
Right. That'll take a whole other show, but we have to leave it there. We've run out of time. Let's hope the WHO chief is correct when he's optimistic. This year can be the end. Thank you so much for joining us, Hadi Yassin, Oksana Pizik and Prasanna Selegram. We appreciate your time and your thoughts. Thank you for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, you can go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can join the conversation on Twitter as well. Our handle is AJInsideStory. For myself and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching and bye-bye for now.